claustrophobic afternoon in Montreal, suffocating and without a breath of wind. I was tired and slightly headachy from the flight. Usually I love the heat, but today it wasn't helping my fatigued condition. As I trudged down the street, I saw a knot of people outside a building, and as I got closer, I saw they were devotees. Well, that had to be the Swami's building, I thought, and turned to walk back to the temple. I looked back at the group, and on second thought, decided to go and see what they were doing, loitering around on the sidewalk. This is from when the devotees were Shamasundar and Malati and everybody were Mukunda and what was the last name? Janaki and the third Jamuna and Buddha were on their way to England to start the temple in London. And they stopped, they went from California and they stopped in Montreal to see Prabhupada on their way to get his blessings for the endeavor. So they're in Montreal now. There were four devotees I saw as I approached, and in the center sat the Swami, perched on a chair on the sidewalk, soaking in the sunlight. I looked up at the building. No verandas, and this facade was facing south. This was obviously the place the Swami came to get his daily sunshine. So we can practice Krishna consciousness in any condition of life, the Swami was saying. I sat down on the pavement next to one of the Canadian devotees and tried to look inconspicuous. This extemporaneous outdoor class was a bonus I hadn't counted on. Whether one is rich or poor, anyone can practice Krishna consciousness and perfect one's life. A short, dark-complexioned man, maybe Turkish or Italian, I thought, came up behind us and stood for a few moments by a car, taking in the unusual scene in front of him. Then he curled his legs under him and sat down on the sidewalk next to me. We must learn and always adhere to the teachings of the Vedic literature, the Swami was saying. There's difference between ignorance and innocence. Innocence means one is like a child, but ignorant means he has no knowledge. He is a fool. The man interrupted. I think we have a lot to learn from children, he said. It seemed a rather innocuous and innocent interruption to me, but the Swami's response was abrupt. He didn't want to make small talk today. He wanted to teach. You can't learn anything from children. What can a child teach you? What do you mean? The man asked. Child has no knowledge, the Swami said, but we can learn from animals. Animals have much to teach us. We can learn faithfulness from the dog. Even if the master aims his gun at the dog's head and shoots him, the dog will remain faithful to the death. I realized right away that the Swami was playing a philosophical debating game with this man, as he often did with his students. The stranger seemed interested and listened for a while, but he didn't offer any further comment. The conversation veered in another direction, and after a few minutes, the man got up and went on his way. It was almost as if the Swami was aiming his discourse solely at the devotees. It was still a couple of days until the Janmashtami festival, so the six of us busied ourselves with organizing the final details of our trip. We had booked the cheapest possible route to India, to England. A convoluted journey with Loftleider, the Icelandic airline, which went from New York to Luxembourg via Reykjavik, the capital of Iceland. We discovered that in order to get into England, each couple should have about £4,000 for maintenance. There was no way each of us could come up with that kind of cash, but between us we could cover two people. So we came up with a plan where we would pool our money and travel one couple at a time to London. Each couple would present the required amount at the border, and then would wire the same money back to the next couple, who would repeat the process. Over the next few days, I noticed a young Indian man who came to the temple punctually at noon to pay his respects to Krishna. Dressed in a dark business suit and tie, he bowed down and touched his forehead to the floor in front of the dozen or so paintings of Krishna on the wall. As he bowed, he said, Om Krishna, Om Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Om 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 Rama, Om Rama, Rama Rama, Om Om. His behavior struck me as eccentric, but it was obviously devotional. Watching him the day before Janmashtami, I realized we all have our own individual and personal relationship with God. The morning of Janmashtami, I was filled with nostalgia, remembering our first Janmashtami in New York 2 years earlier. As I sat and listened to the Swami speak in the Montreal temple room, I looked around at all the new devotees' faces and thought how different this celebration was to that first festival. Not only were there more people, there were more committed people who were dedicated to helping the Swami spread Krishna consciousness. I took in the paintings on the walls, the large temple room, and the Swami's beautiful seat. This all served as evidence to me that the seeds the Swami had planted were flowering. I knew, of course, that the movement had grown dramatically, but now I felt as if I was seeing it for myself. We were celebrating the birth of Lord Krishna in another country, but for me, this day was also about celebrating the Swami's achievement. That was only 2 years after the first devotees started coming at 26 Second Avenue, and already there were temples in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Montreal, and Boston, and New York. And there was a lot of devotees, I don't know, maybe 100 devotees or more. And things were developing quickly. It just goes to show that Krishna consciousness is meant for everyone. It's not sectarian or by nation or anything. Krishna consciousness is universal because we're all part and parcel of Krishna. Let's hear that.
I said that the class is only 20 minutes, like 21 minutes. And you're stuck
there. Well, yeah, two of them. Oh, I mean, you want me to read one?
Well, one of them is like not, he's like at the end, and his voice is sort of like feeble. It's not so clear, so I chose the first one.
All right, I read some.
I've never known a country to require you to have so much money on you to get in.
If you want to stay there, you just.
You know? Kind of odd, isn't it?
I don't know. I hardly ever travel.
He made all the time. Before they used to do all that.
Yeah? You want to make sure you can take care of yourself while you're there?
Yeah.
The format of the Janmashtami observation was to be the same as the New York one had been. Fasting all day, chanting with instruments, listening to the Swami speak, and chanting individually on our beads. This was to continue until midnight, when we would have a special arti ceremony for the deities, followed by a feast. And as in New York, there was an initiation ceremony with many new devotees receiving their beads and Sanskrit names from the Swami. The six of us were awarded second initiation, Brahmin initiation, which I remembered the Swami mentioning at my first initiation ceremony. He gave us a sacred mantra, which he called Gayatri, and which he said we should memorize and chant three times a day at sunrise, noon, and sunset. The Swami stayed in the temple room with everyone for a good part of the day, chanting with us and speaking about Krishna. God's senses, Krishna's senses, are not limited, he said. Just like I can see with my eyes, but Krishna can also eat with his eyes. He is within your heart. He is everywhere, so he can appear from everywhere. Just like the sun rises from the eastern side, it does not mean that the eastern side is the mother of the sun. We simply see that the sun is rising from the eastern side. In this way, if we try to understand in truth, then we can understand what God is, what is God. Superficially, if we try to understand by our experimental knowledge, then it is not possible to understand God. Of course, this Janmashtami ceremony is observed by all Hindus. Irrespective of becoming Krishna follower or not, this ceremony is observed in India in every home. Just like in your Western countries, the Christmas is observed in every home. Similarly, Janmashtami is observed in every home. Today is a great ceremonial day. So today we should offer prayers to Krishna. The other religious sects, just like the Christians, they offer prayer. The Mohammedans, they offer prayer. So prayer, offering prayer, is also one of the items of bhakti, devotion. So I shall invite all of you today to speak about Krishna, he said. My heart sunk. This was a trip down memory lane, and this time I was pretty sure I wouldn't be able to get out of it. The Swami was looking around the room. So I shall request Janardan to speak something about his realization of Krishna. Inside, I shut out whatever Janardan was saying so that I could mentally prepare my speech. Then I found an old receipt in my wallet and jotted down a few ideas with a leaky red pen that I found in my pocket. My face felt hot. I glanced over my shoulder and saw that the room was full of people, devotees, interested Canadian guests, and many Indian-born Hindus. So we should try to chant Hare Krishna as much as we can, Janardan was concluding. I guess that's my main realization, Hare Krishna. The Swami nodded at him and asked the young Texan devotee, Gaurasundar, to speak, then Jamuna, then Janaki. The devotee spoke lofty philosophy, borrowing many of the Swami's phrases. I was surprised that they sounded so elevated, so eloquent, so persuasive, despite being relative newcomers. I could imagine them speaking with any professor, any philosopher, any penetrating intellectual. My confidence was dwindling. Whatever I said was going to be redundant and anticlimactic. Let him speak, the Swami said, turning in my direction, Mukunda. I cleared my throat and looked out at the darkening sky, my face burning. Well, I said, I offer my respectful obeisances to our spiritual master, Bhaktivedanta Swami, who is very dear to Lord Krishna, having taken shelter unto his lotus feet. I swallowed hard and looked at the wall. The Krishna consciousness movement is intended to make a solution to our everyday problems, I said, after a long pause. It's not a kind of place where people just come because there's some religious rites being performed. Everyone in this age is thinking that I am free, but actually I am not free. I am very bound up. We're strictly bound up by the stringent laws of nature. In every status of life, I have to serve somebody or something or my own body. In every status of life, I have to serve my wife or I have to serve my children. I have to serve my pet. I have to serve my work or my boss or my associates. I heard myself repeating phrases I'd heard the Swami use. Bound up, stringent, status, and serve were not words that I used. Not in public speaking, not in writing, and certainly not in casual conversation. If I'm very wealthy, very elevated, or very beautiful physically, I continued, even then I always have to serve somebody. If nothing else, one has to serve one's own stomach. I have to eat. I have to get food. I have to serve my stomach. So I am not free at all. I have to do these things. There's no way I can stop. If I don't eat, I will die. So our natural position as a living entity is that we have to serve something. That's our natural position. If something is wrong with my hand and I want to be cured, I don't grab onto some foodstuffs or some medicines, some herbs, and squeeze them with the hand and think that this hand is going to be nourished or cured. I take the medicine or the food through my mouth, and then it circulates to the digestive system and through the blood and finally comes to the hand. So the hand, unless it's serving its source, is useless. The servant must serve the master, or the part must serve the whole. And our relationship with God is the same. Just like the hand is made out of mucus, bile, and air, flesh and bone, as all the body is. It is just stool. I like this example, and it always made me laugh inside. Bile, stool, and mucus were terms I knew Ayurvedic medical practitioners used, words that the Swami also used to describe human physiology. I'd never used the word stool before I met the Swami, except maybe in a doctor's office or in the word stool pigeon. I figured the Indians in the temple room might like this touch. I glanced back and saw the young suited man looking blankly toward me from the other end of the room. But we're made of spirit, I rushed on, promising myself that I wouldn't look back again. Qualitatively, we're the same as Krishna, but quantitatively, we're many millions of times smaller. Qualitatively the same, quantitatively different. So if we're fragmental portions, separated parts and parcels, we can serve the source or the whole, and we can be cured of this material disease, which is rampant nowadays. And this is possible only by mercy. I glanced over at the Swami. His eyes were closed, his face expressionless. He looked to me like he was listening intently. I felt like I had become a mouthpiece transmitting information rather than being any kind of original speaker. So simply by hearing the message of Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, we can immediately get some relief from this material existence. Just like when we were chanting here, and you could feel some ecstasy. Well, this ecstasy goes on unlimitedly and infinitely, eternally, if one takes to it. It's always eternal, ever increasing. Just like the relationship between ourselves and our spiritual master is eternal and ever increasing, our relationship with God is the same. So please try to realize that this is a very serious movement, and we're not asking you to sign up or pay us anything, but simply to sincerely try it, and you'll immediately feel some benefit. I was done. I looked at the Swami, but he was already scanning the room for his next speaker. I breathed a sigh of relief. Stop here. So this is a perfect example of how to preach. Like the devotee is only a year or two or a few months in Krishna consciousness. The longest devotee is like Mukunda. But all they were doing was repeating everything Prabhupada had been saying, using the words and phrases that Prabhupada used. We all use a lot of words and phrases now that we never used growing up. I never used it. But we never used, but because we heard Prabhupada saying them, we just repeat them. And Prabhupada said time after time after time, we're talking about how someone becomes a guru in disciplic succession, he said, all you do is you hear and repeat. That's the whole duty of the disciple who may become a guru himself, but any disciple, the only duty is to hear what his spiritual master says and repeat it faithfully. The best classes, like that class that he gave, that speech that Mukunda Maharaj gave, yeah, that was a perfect class. He just repeated everything he heard from Prabhupada. That makes a perfect class. Of course, devotees add their own realizations, and that's good also. But it should rely most heavily Just this very specific examples that Prabhupada used, like the stomach feeds the hand feeds the stomach, or watering the tree by watering the roots of it, and all the parts get watered automatically. Just repeating the simple examples that Prabhupada used. Can start to.
Lecture is about